Siren Radio.
See, that is world news, clearly breaking news, that Wild Stallion's bodacious dude is actually going to take a quarter, nearly a quarter of the news from the Sky News Centre. I mean, I noticed actually Gabriella Peralta, no sign of Bill and Ted and the most excellent adventure on the Gibraltar Chronicle. I mean, are you behind the schedule on that? Or has Bill and Ted actually not managed to cross over with, of course, Keanu at his finest?
No, I don't think they haven't crossed over to Gibraltar. So.
You're going
to
tell me now
that
not only have you never got round to watching the DVD of Timothy Dalton's Living Daylights just for the opening shots of Gibraltar, really, you didn't have to watch the whole movie. You know? But you're also going to say probably you've never seen Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, aren't you?
Yeah, I've never seen it. I don't know where it is.
Dear Lord above. Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey? No, it's pointless. I'm going to swear. Eloise, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure?
I've not seen it. I don't remember it. Sorry.
Wow. Ben?
Living Daylights, but not... No, not Bill and Ted.
And yet, as I say, 40 seconds worth of the news, more or less, devoted to that. Kira's outside. She's bobbing up and down like somebody who says, yeah, let me in now. Rory?
It's a no from me too, but wow. Kira may have seen it. She'll be in the studio.
No, it's not going to happen. Hopefully. I mean, I would actually probably stake considerable amounts of finance that it'll be a no from Kira. You know, I might be sort of predisposing our wonderful Scottish Ilkley correspondent or Ilkson, but I'll put it to her now. Kira Alsbrook, have you ever seen Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure?
No.
No, yeah, exactly. So it was a safe.
It's worth a try.
Yeah, exactly. Gabriella, what is the weather for Lincoln from Gibraltar?
Okay, so the weather for Lincoln today is highs of 15 degrees centigrade, lows of 10 degrees centigrade, and it will be a day of light cloud with a gentle breeze.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
And I think Eloise is keen to find out what state of consciousness are. I mean, we're getting lots of little doggy friends again, because last night, of course, we had Bo, the canine, and I've actually given him a name check in the podcast of the author.
Yeah,
so that's I thought it was important. I couldn't remember the name of his rat, and I don't think we actually identified from Robin,
was
it?
We didn't actually talk to him about him.
No. Oh, well, a fortnight's time. But what should we ask Gabriella now about Frodo?
What is he doing right now?
Yeah, what is he doing right now, Gabriella?
He's in his bed.
There we are.
Kind of laying in the house.
That's the simple sort of area that we actually need to work our way through. That Kira is currently sort of realising that she needs to actually be plugged in. Otherwise, she can't hear a word you're saying, Gabriella, which is always sort of problematic from that point
she
of view.
She work off power outputs, does she?
Yes. I think so. She charges up. I mean, regularly, she comes into the seminar, and first of all, the phone goes into charge socket, then she charges herself, and then it's, whoa, it's go, is it? Good morning, Kira. How are we?
I'm very well, thank you.
Wonderful. Exactly. It's. I mean, in many ways, Kira
is
like a human embodiment of a living hamster, I find. You know, it's not, and that's in a very positive way, but anthropologically speaking, you know, energy going around there, and then suddenly, oh, I'm just so tired and go to hibernation. Anyway, that's fine.
It seems in my life, to be fair.
Well, there you are. So let's move back to Gibraltar, because that's where Gabriella actually is at present, and probably will remain there for a considerable period of time. And this line about amid Brexit chaos in London, the Gibraltar Chronicle says that it's ready whatever happens. Do you have confidence, or do you think, I don't think we know what we're doing at all? Or is it all the fault of the English?
We have to follow the UK's lead.
Well, technically, it's really England, isn't it? Because, I mean, you talk about the UK, but Scotland don't want anything to do with this. Northern Ireland don't really want anything to do with it. Wales, well, they've won the rugby, so they don't really care at this particular point. So, you know, let's re-nationalise it down a bit more and say it's an English problem, yeah?
Oh, Theresa May's lead, there we go.
Okay.
We're just planning for every single outcome. So I think that's how you cover all your bases.
Is that possible?
We don't know
Can
what's happening,
that?
So we'll just make sure for whatever the decision is
every
that we have
single
a plan.
Outcome. Okay, straw poll time. Kira, Brexit. Is it something that's floated your boat? Is it something which you just think, frankly,
let's get political at 8:06. 6 minutes and 54 seconds into the show.
Exactly. You know,
couldn't talk about the B word.
Well, you know, there's another B word coming up, but we're sure. Kira, any thoughts?
I've got many thoughts, but I'm not going to broadcast them on air.
Exercising her right to sort of anonymity for the whole point of view. Just demonstrating actually there, Eloise, that people can actually see, because you see there was a joint
it's
sort of
you're sitting down. It's because you're standing up this day, you can't see.
Oh, so when I stand up, I become invisible?
Yes.
Oh, interesting. That's a point to actually ponder on from that point of view. Is the same thing with respect to Brexit? When politicians stand up, do they become invisible?
We wish, but no.
Rory?
I too have a lot of opinions. I think it's rather interesting that Theresa May stood up and said it's a great personal regret to potentially extend the Article 50 deadline. But I don't think I'm going to go much more into that. I'm with Kira on this one.
Thank you.
Obviously, Ben, you're so flushed with the success of Brighton, actually, and the...
Well, that's it. My focus has gone from Brexit now. It's football and
how much did
beating
you,
Man City.
How much was the Millwall goalkeeper paid to actually throw
I don't
the
know. I mean, I'm checking out. It's on par with Piegate.
Allegedly.
A couple of years ago with the pie.
I think it might be on par with that, I'm just thinking, you know, that kind of... The more you look
Are you just jealous, Alex? Because we didn't actually rob Swansea of a match.
let's just step away from that sort of things and enjoy the privilege, because you might be going to Wembley, I believe.
Potentially. We'll see.
Or Scarborough. It's either one of
those. Scarborough. How glamorous is it? What a comparison.
It's 50 years ago, Gabriella, somebody actually tied the knot in Gibraltar, and he was a very famous member of the band called The Beatles. Do you know who it was, Rory?
I mean...
Do you remember the Beatles?
I do remember the Beatles, but I don't know which member it was.
Would it be Ringo?
Eloise, which one do you think?
One out of four chance, really. I don't know. Go for Paul.
Kira? Have you heard of the Beatles?
Yeah, no, I've heard of the Beatles. I know them for the famous walk. Is it across Liverpool or something? On their album cover.
London. Abbey Road.
Across
Liverpool.
Yeah,
that one. Yes. I know. I don't... Really?
If you go to Liverpool,
they're from Liverpool, though.
Yeah, they are. Exactly. So, and Ben, did you have a?
I said Ringo. You said Ringo. It could be George Harrison.
Do you know Gabriella?
Yep.
It was
John Lennon.
Exactly.
The only one I didn't name. I named three of the four.
Tying the knot.
I know, the only one not mentioned, and probably the most famous of them all.
Tying the knot for Yoko Ono. And in this general campaign that we use, I mean, obviously we had the wedding of the century, I think, so far, with Phil Leonis and... Lily Holliman, but now that our other midweek drivette, Emma Tinson, has also tied the knot with Luke. Both have got their first class honours. Luke, actually, from the Film and Television Studies at the University of Lincoln, and Emma from Journalism at the University of Lincoln. I don't know whether we start playing for that. Hopefully they'll put it off for a few years, basically, and we can actually sort of plan and build for that. Because after, I mean, to be honest, the amount of effort we put into the Phil Leonis sort of campaign, I'm just exhausted. I mean, I can't take all this.
We've got to deal with Brexit next.
Well, exactly.
Brighton beat Man City in April.
Midweek drivette's getting married. You know, whoa, just so, Gabrielle, I don't know what you said, but please...
Don't
get married for a few years as yet, because I can't cope with the actual sort of stress and strains. It's just too much, you know, my nerves alone. Gabriella, any questions you want to put to either Kira, Eloise, Rory, or Ben? No. Abigail LeMay isn't actually here at present. She may turn up later. Ah, sorry.
We shall see.
Exactly. But she is off to Iceland next week, so that's going to be a supermarket trip well worth going to.
Very nice. It's Kerry Katona would be proud.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Well, I always feel I'm trying to redress the balance for Lincoln and Kerry after her experience with respect to... Yeah. Not the new theatre or Lincoln, no. But her experience at the engine shed, really. Where she mistook the greetings of the audiences for actually bottles being thrown at her. You know, it's just like
plastic. We'll add,
of course.
But
you've got to keep
it's
that.
Not, it's the principle more than anything.
It's a problem.
Yeah,
it was a little mini challenge there. Confused things. Yeah. Theresa May will find the same thing when she goes to Europe.
I'm sure she'll fancy it wherever she goes.
But hopefully no plastic, because you know, anti-environmental. As we've rightly said, in terms of time, it's 8:11 in Lincoln, England. In Gibraltar, it's 9:11. Last two questions, please, for Gabriella from Kira.
Gabriella, have you enjoyed your time with us today?
I have, thank you.
And would you, I forgot the last question. Oh no, that was it. Would you want to come back next week?
Yeah, I'll be back. D-Ball!
started making love, and no one really cares. There's Natchez in the bathroom, just below the stairs. Starting back in China, so finish what you got.
Nobody told me there'd be days like these. An abundance of life, love and hope, according to The Observer. Unflinching and unforgettable, Rolling Stone magazine. Julia Roberts rises to the challenge magnificently from Kate Stables in Total Film. We are, of course, referring to Royal Rory. Can you just read that particular headline there that we actually got? It's...
Ben is back.
I am.
Not exactly.
After missing the show last night, I'm back.
This is the way forward. Richard Fitzwilliams, what better way to actually lead into the Lucas Hedges, Julia Roberts thing, and this wonderful Peter Hedges production, which is all about our very own Ben Lewis. Or is it?
Well, is it indeed? I must say, I think you should be very grateful that it isn't. You've read... rave reviews. Mine is not a rave review, I fear. And I'm sorry to say this, because firstly, obviously I was looking forward to it, because, as you mentioned, it has a wonderful cast. Julia Roberts, Lucas Hedges. As Alex would say, what's not to love? Absolutely, except that as the film drags on, we are drawn into a world of improbability that the best actors and actresses couldn't rescue us from. I mean, there is tremendous potential there, obviously, because of who they are. But the point is, what does the film actually show us? Because if the material's bad, it can be very, very difficult to be convincing. Holly Burns, played by Julia Roberts, returns home with her kids by her second husband to find her son Ben, played by Lucas Hedges, in the driveway. He's skipped rehab as he's been a drug addict, which and this causes grievous problems for the family. So Holly has to ensure that she doesn't lose sight of him, and she actually, in one of the best bits of the film, actually meets his ex-doctor and gives him a piece of her mind. It's a long time ago that this happened, and it also was a fact that Ben was destroyed, or pretty well destroyed, and as we discover, he had an effect that was far from favourable on others when he was peddling drugs. He actually goes to a meeting and tells them about his early problems. He meets a girl who he actually had hooked on drugs, and then Holly finds drugs in him and realises all is far from well, and the family go to church. Whilst they're at church, somebody breaks into their home and kidnaps the dog. Well, horrible, yes, certainly. But then Ben sets off on a journey. Now, this is in capital letters because this is Hollywood and this is simply not convincing, because he goes to a variety of, or visits a variety of individuals who have been linked to him and drugs in one way or another in the past. Driving there with him, Holly, to begin with, yes, and finally it is the case that he leaves her, wants her to go home, she won't, because she wants to stay with him, be supportive, and gets involved in, as all I can say is, in a series of events that were written by screenwriters, and somebody thought they were convincing, and quite frankly, as he goes from house to house, and indeed gets involved to get his dog back in further, further matters dealing with drugs, shall we say, I really felt that despite, as I say, two wonderful performers, what we were watching simply didn't make sense. And I love the way at weird hours in the night, nonetheless, when you're looking for someone, suddenly for some reason they turn up, or you're able to find them, or indeed even you go below the arches and there are a load of junkies and all the rest of it. What do you find, and how do you discover where your beloved son has gone, and where has he gone to get a dog back? What does he do? All this is completely unconvincing. I just didn't find that it was a story that I thought was true. And when you've got material that's second rate, I'm afraid, as I come back to what I said originally, this was a movie that isn't what they say it is. Now, if you want a movie like that, if you want a story that really does...
Are you saying, Richard, it's not about chiropractors and actually working on the spinal cord then? It's not...
What I'm saying is that if you look at Beautiful Boy, Steve Carell, Timothy Chalamet, you've got a powerful father-son relationship, and the way that's put under the microscope is convincing. Whereas here, I mean, yes, there's the chemistry between Julia Roberts and Lucas Hedges, that's undeniable, but the facts are that if they, the story doesn't make sense.
And yet, even...
Whereas Beautiful Boy did, and indeed was moving, and it was powerful, the world of the drug addict is terrifying.
Okay.
But this is Hollywood's take on it.
Well, in the words of Josh Rom from Talk Radio, a station of which, of course, you've appeared on Talk Radio Europe, here, one word, well, actually two words hyphenated, heartbreaking. Perhaps backbreaking would be another line that he could have used, but never mind. Gripping, according to Joyce Glasser from the Mature Times. But we all know, as I'm sure Richard will attest to, that sometimes when people look for four-star reviews like The Observer's An Abundance of Life, Love and Hope, they pick the best bits out of the horror routine. You'd have to go some to find some best bits in terms of Richard's routine, unless, of course, you're referencing Beautiful Boy. Richard, let's do the straw poll. Kira, would you be checking out Ben Is Back as opposed to checking out Ben's Back?
Maybe.
The contraction is very important.
Maybe. Yeah, I'll get the...
Ben is back.
Ben is back one.
Yes, okay. Kira, you've already said your point, so let's go to Eloise.
You do that a lot.
Maybe, if I get the time from
dissertation. I think Richard would say, don't waste the time, actually.
Well, I'm afraid, I'm sorry to say it, I yield to no one in my admiration for both Julia Roberts and Lucas Hedges. I say the cast is not the point. The point is that there's real potential in the story. And go and see Beautiful Boy if you haven't seen it, because that really puts the microscope on the problems of drug addiction, the angst, and that's realistic. The journey in the second half of this, I mean, I just thought, what are they thinking of next? Because this simply wouldn't happen. It isn't convincing. And, well, the other thing is, if you want, this is a common problem with a lot of films, if you want real monsters and baddies, well...
Go and see Captain Marvel.
They've chosen some pretty good villains in this one. I mean, the point with a villain, he's wonderful in movies. You can spot him by looking at him.
Does he twirl his moustache?
Absolutely.
Very good. Yes. That's so important. And from the movie trivia world, Peter Hedges, who of course directed it, any relation to Lucas Hedges, who acts in it? I just wonder that. You know,
Lucas Hedges. He's a good,
Peter Hedges.
Good director,
Lucas Hedges, Academy Award nominee. Peter Hedges, but obviously not in this case, according to Ben.
Where have I heard his name before?
A name, obviously, close to your own heart. Ben is back. Will you be checking out to see it? Will you say, I pour scorn on Richard Fitzwilliams?
I really like the cast, and I think...
So do I.
And I think the problem is, it's sad if it's... it's a pretty sad film anyway, but judging by Richard's feedback...
It's damning, isn't it?
Really? I wonder if it's... If there was a rating, Richard, what would you give it?
Well, I mean, I'd give it 2 simply because the cast are who they are.
That is that 2 out of 3?
And that is not a reason to out of 5, and that is not a reason to give it 2. I mean, it just didn't do it for me because, I mean, Alex doesn't usually begin with reading out so many rave reviews from others.
I sensed, Richard, we needed to counterbalance things here. You know,
but you didn't know that I was going to slate it.
No, Richard, sometimes, you know, how long have we worked together? Nearly a decade now.
How did you sense
that? I just, you know, the mystical mists of time, really.
Yeah. The mists.
He just knew as soon as it featured the word Ben, that was it. He knew he wouldn't like it.
And yet, I don't believe it has any scenes of people forcing film critics to actually watch trailers on mobile phones in the whole thing.
Well, all I can say is that it is something that I was looking forward to, and I was very disappointed by.
I mean, sense you're
underwhelmed. He's underwhelmed.
You can have the best performers in the world, but I just didn't buy the second half of this movie. It isn't obviously that the film doesn't have its moments. It does, but they're in the first half, and also, of course, there's a current family having to deal with the problems of a drug addict who, as I say, goes on this bizarre journey, which is supposed to be meaningful, and the meaningful has a capital M because it, as I say, has all the hallmarks of being written, as it of course was, by Hollywood screenwriters who thought that this would be dramatic and powerful.
Are you saying Hollywood screenwriters don't know?
There are so many close-ups in this movie, as there would be, and I mean, as I say, I have again a searing portrait of a family torn apart by their teenage son's opioid addiction.
Let's starve the movie of the oxygen of
Lucas
publicity.
Read his dad's script for Ben is Back. Oh, there is the relationship that you mentioned.
There we are, you see, so there we are. It is a connection, so there we have it. They are father and son, just destroyed by Richard
Fitzwilliams. And 82% on Rotten Tomatoes, there you have it too.
And Rory.
I think it'll have to be Beautiful Boy for me first before I see this movie. If Richard's recommendations.
And probably for Ben is Back, you basically would not buy the second half of the movie, so you actually just pay half a ticket.
Yes, although to put it out there, I would watch any movie with Ben in it.
Well, there we
have it. That's a professional actor called Ben. That's not me, Ben, just to confirm.
I mean, I've always said Ben Affleck is awesome in so many ways. He's the Keira Knightley of the male acting profession, I feel. But let's move on to this tale of a self-imposed exile in Arles and France. We're talking At Eternity's Gate here. We're talking wonderful golden daffodils. Are we talking Sliced Ears? Are we talking Willem Dafoe? Are we just talking At Eternity's Gate?
Well, we're talking obviously about another biopic about a famous artist, and I have to say I haven't seen the Kirk Douglas Anthony Quinn film about Van Gogh, the long made in the 1950s, but a variety of these movies the wonderful Seraphine with featured Yolanda Moreau. Frida, a glorious movie with Selma Hayek. Mr. Turner, which I have to say had Timothy Spall in, directed by Mike Lee, about the artist. Turner, I mean, I loved it, and a great number of reviewers loved it, and for some reason it got nowhere. And The Agony and the Ecstasy, if we go back to Michelangelo in the 1960s, the Charlton Heston and Rex Harrison. So, I mean, obviously it's one of these fields where you, from time to time, you get movies, sometimes extremely dramatic ones. Certainly Van Gogh's short life, he died at 38. He's played by Willem Dafoe, who's 63. Now, that is a challenge, but Dafoe has got a...
Richard, digital de-aging. If it worked for Samuel Jackson in Captain Marvel, it can work for Willem Dafoe.
It certainly worked for Willem Dafoe, and I thought it was extremely good. A very compelling, convincing, powerful performance. As seeing Van Gogh as a visionary, as someone who was painting for another age, not his, someone who was hoping to take art in a new direction, but in his time, of course, the tragedies of his psychological traumas, all of these are documented here. We meet him originally en route to Paris in 1888. He meets his brother Theo and continues on foot to Arles, and there we see some of the landscapes that he paints. He wants not to see a landscape, but only the eternity behind it. And certainly, if you go to the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam, and if you haven't, please do. It is full of the most glorious masterpieces, and indeed, he's an absolutely fascinating artist to study. But the is he painting not for the present, but for the future? And what about his mental state? And what about much of the movie? And this is rather unsatisfactory because we don't see a great deal of it. We know that Van Gogh was heavily influenced by a visit from Gauguin. And Gauguin, obviously the famous painter, he calms him after an altercation with schoolchildren, which there's no question that Van Gogh was much pilloried for this. And Gauguin also wants to change the way art is going, moving it into a different direction. But his departure, which absolutely devastates Van Gogh, is very, very speedy. And there isn't enough shown of the relationship between them to see why Van Gogh would have been quite so desperate when
I'm saddened that you missed out one of the crucial, critical aspects of Vincent van Gogh's career in your review. You're normally absolutely perfect in this side of things, but as Eloise will confirm, all of these answers can be solved by watching the Doctor Who episode Vincent and the Doctor with, of course, Matt Smith and Karen Gillam as Amy Pond. And they meet Vincent van Gogh, do they not?
It tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah. Rory's acknowledging
saves you
that.
A film.
So, in fact, Van Gogh in Arles, Van Gogh in Paris,
yes.
Van Gogh
all of those, all eternity's gate, because it's a TARDIS, Richard. See, that's the time thing. Travel in time and space.
We see him in a mental hospital. We also
that
see
too.
A very sympathetic supervising pastor, a very fine performance here by Mads Mikkelsen. And we see his return to painting and drawing, and also we see a version of what finally happens to him, generally considered to be suicide, but this will be an eye-opener.
But you don't see the Doctor actually revealing to him that actually he does become a success after he's died. I mean, that's the thing that's missing, really.
Well, I think that it's unnecessary, putting it mildly, but what one must mention with this movie, I mean, I have to say I saw saw it on my laptop because I was sent a link.
What have you started?
He's now watching things on laptop. It's not as bad as a phone.
I had hoped to see the widescreen version, and indeed I saw the trailer of it on the widescreen, and my goodness, it is a gorgeous film to look at.
Sorry, Richard, you watched the trailer on the widescreen as well. I mean, are you ill?
No, I did not. I watched the trailer on the widescreen when I was seeing Everybody Knows, which is what we're going to be discussing next week. the new Oscar for Hardy film. But the point was that, unfortunately, they don't seem to have had many screenings for this, which they certainly should have. And I'm simply advising anyone who wants to see it to wait until it opens in cinemas, which I'm sure, in any case, they would. But to see it with the glorious colour that, I mean, visually, obviously, this is very impressive. But much of this movie is also
a bit too much yellow for me,
Richard. Much of this, Alex has started a series of interruptions, bringing in Doctor Who and other things. He's having fun. He's having some fun with an artist.
Do not slice your ear off, Richard. It's not good. It doesn't give you stereophonic vision.
Come on, you must treat this seriously. It's a dramatic film, and you see much of it from... The vision is often distorted, as undoubtedly Van Gogh's was, but then, of course, when you've got a genius, this is what can happen. And the cast is to die for. Rupert Friend as his brother Theo, Matthew Amalric as Dr. Paul Gachet, a rather good performance, Emmanuel Seignier, who you will remember, will you, Manon de Source,
Jean de Florette, Manon de Source. I mean, let's face it, with that no experience for the joys of...
I mean, those are really brilliant films, absolutely. She is the woman from Arles, who Van Gogh immortalised. Oscar Isaac...
I was going to say Gérard Depardieu.
I wish we'd seen somewhat more of the relationship at all, the friendship between Gauguin and Van Gogh, which was so shattered when Gauguin left.
I sense, Richard, this is getting slightly more of a positive review for yourself.
Oh, well, there's no question that it's a fascinating film. There's also no question that it's important to see it on the glorious widescreen, which lends force to Steven Spielberg's attack a few weeks ago on Netflix.
Yeah, it's just bitter. That's all. It's just the bitter ramblings of a fine director who's probably just going through a sort of dotage, really.
I see. He's in his anecdotage, is he?
Well,
yes, I see. You say that to Spielberg. I'd like to be there when Spielberg was
Steven,
said it to him.
Steven, offer is there. You know, you come on the Midweek Drive. We'll chat. We'll talk all sorts of things, frankly.
Well, you'll get him on the Midweek Drive. Yes, I can well imagine it. But, I mean, this is, to be frank about At Eternity's Gate, and despite the huge age disparities, I say, Willem Dafoe is 63, playing someone who died in his late 30s, it is challenging, but he does very, very well. It's touching, it's visually impressive, it's full of dark moments, and there's no question that Van Gogh's reputation is safe for eternity, and you can see in the way the film depicts these, I mean, what was undoubtedly a desperately, desperately tormented existence. It gives an idea, you get a catalyst, so to speak, for some of the amazing visions that he had. I mean, and he was so prolific. This is amazing. A friend of mine who's an artist thought that the actual representations of the works were not as good as they might be.
Much yellow, Richard, I said. Too much yellow. That's the problem. You got too many sunflowers there.
I see you. I hope you've got some sunflowers in the studio. I mean,
no. You know,
they brighten life up. You haven't?
No, not whatsoever.
Do you think we made them, honey?
The closest we've got is Ben's mustard shirt. And meanwhile, another public relations company is calling to phone up to say, are we doing this piece at night? Of course we are. I mean, that's what we do.
They're a bit premature, aren't they?
Alex, I've got to ask you,
yes.
Are you an admirer of Van Gogh? Because you seem to have a lot of levity around with Van Gogh. I've just noticed, you know...
How else can you treat manic depression other than laugh at the whole sort of situation? You need to work through that process. As Churchill said, if you're going through hell, the important thing is keep on going.
Keep going. No, he did. You're right about that. I mean, I have to say that this is a... I mean, I do think this is a very sincere film, and it's interesting it's directed by Julian Schnabel, because he did The Diving Bell and the Butterfly, and you remember a very, very touching film, someone who was only able, after a terrifying stroke, to communicate with his eyes. This was played by the character played by Matthew Amalric, who appears here as a doctor. And so Schnabel has some experience of dealing with the desperately disturbing.
Richard, key points. Let's find out what our assembled quartet of quality actually makes about the whole thing. Kira, will you be checking out At Eternity's Gate? Not to be confused, of course, with Heaven's Gate, which is another wonderful movie which almost bankrupted Hollywood back in the 1980s.
May I just correct, Alex? You know, it's very, very important. You're slipping all sorts of things in. Let's just... Let's be precise about this. Heaven's Gate was a load of twaddle.
Yes.
And in 1981 or two, it did indeed. It bankrupted.
Exactly.
Not Hollywood. One studio is not Hollywood.
And I said not...
What it did with Michael Cimino, it bankrupted United Artists.
Yeah,
they gave him his head. But nonetheless, I'm afraid that it also was a result of a fascinating duel between critics in Britain and Europe who thought it was a work of genius that the Americans had failed to appreciate.
Well,
and American critics who thought it was a load of junk. I'm afraid to say I saw the complete version, which was screened last year, I think it was at Cannes, and the critics were ecstatic, or whether I saw the shorter version.
Well, there we are.
But I didn't like it.
Hence the reason I prefaced it with not to be confused with. So,
You're in a very mischievous mood today.
Look, it's a spring equinox, Richard. You know,
I understand. I didn't expect Heaven's Gate to come up, that's all, but I've not forgotten it.
Well, I'm still working on a sort of balance in which we can actually get Steven Spielberg directing Keira Knightley in a version of something.
No, I think you should have the two of them in a discussion about film.
We will, Richard. Believe me, we will.
Yes,
Keira. That's not Knightley, that's obviously Allsbrook. Keira.
Yeah, God, it's not Knightley.
At Eternity's Gate.
No,
may I ask, by the way, has anyone seen The Aftermath?
Yes. And we talked about that last week, Richard, so don't go there. We've only got another hour and 20 minutes on the show. So, Keira Allsbrook.
Yeah, I'll keep it short and sweet, and I'll say probably not, to be fair.
Probably not. Okay.
Okay.
And Rory.
Interesting twist on the ending with the whole mischief instead of suicide thing. I think I may do.
Mischief instead of suicide.
It is certainly unusual, and it's certainly... this is a thesis about how Van Gogh actually died, and it's not proven one way or the other, but it's interesting that the film takes it and uses it, and I thought it worked rather well.
If you weren't writing your dissertation on the work in the times of Gene Kelly,
yes.
Eloise, would you actually take this as a possible area and say, yes, I want to see At Eternity's Gate?
I would, because I really really adore William Dafoe. So I would.
Or even Willem Dafoe.
That's he's a very, very fine actor. And also, of course, we must mention that despite the fact I don't think many people have seen the film, it meant that he got an Academy Award nomination for Best Actor, and that is no mean feat.
Exactly, and it's got career. Mads Mikkelsen as well, who was in Casino Royale. It's just fantastic.
Oh, yes. Is there a tear
But
yes,
it's not blood. It's not made of blood. That's the important thing. Ben, At Eternity's Gate.
An extremely fine performer.
The cast is fantastic, and I really admire it, and I do like the backstory to it. Mm. However,
a bit like Ben's back, really.
Well, yeah, I guess. But however, it's whilst it, yeah. To be honest, I don't think it's for me. But I would quite happily sit and watch it if I wanted to, or if I needed to.
Emma Street might be going to see it. She's waving at the door, so we'll see what happens with respect to that.
We shall see.
Rory, last two questions for Richard, please.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us, Richard?
Oh, yeah, I have indeed, and I'm surprised that Alex hasn't reminded you that Willem Dafoe played Christ 30 years ago in The Last Temptation, and Van Gogh is a Christ-like figure here.
And will you be joining us again soon?
How could I miss it? Alex will be in even more mischievous form next week, perhaps. The spring is even closer.
I've looked ahead. Frankly, I don't know what's going to be the case, basically, because, you know, we might be into a whole range of things there. Only literally days away before seeking another extension from our friends in Europe. Still, what the heck?
Oh, my goodness. To bring that up.
Chance his girlfriend came across a needle, and soon she did the same. At home, there are 17-year-old boys, and their idea of fun is being in a gang called the Disciples, high on crack, toting a machine gun. Church and kill everyone inside. You turn on the telly and every other story is telling you somebody died. My sister killed a baby cause she couldn't afford to feed it, and it was sending people to the moon. In September my cousin tried reefer for the very first time. Now he's doing horse. It's June.
But when he was actually Prince, sign of the times. Siren Radio coming up to 8:45. Well, actually, just past 16 minutes to 9 o'clock in Lincoln, England. Is that the same time in Newcastle, England, Arthur McKenzie?
Oh, spot on.
Wow, that's amazing. They're on the same timeline. It's cool, fantastic. Five fine folk in the studio. Yes, five. Richard Fitzwilliams went on for so long, Emma Street had time to actually have a full English breakfast, sort out a few other bits and pieces, say, I think I'll come in now. Good morning, Emma.
Good morning.
Marvellous. We also have Rory McGowan.
Hello there.
Marvellous. And Ben Lewis.
Morning.
Ben is back. We've already had that joke. We're not going further down that line. But Ben is very excited because in a few weeks' time, Arthur, he is going to go and experience something that Ian Lennox can only dream of in recent years. He's going to see his team, Brighton and Hove Albion.
Not confirmed, though.
It's a possibility.
Possibility.
And you'll watch it on television if you can't go there.
Exactly.
Or you'll be in Scarborough.
Exactly.
So, you know, either of those things, basically,
watch,
he's going to
watch team
Brighton perform at Wembley Stadium.
Man City at Wembley Stadium.
Eloise Sheehan is also with us.
Hello.
And so is just working her way through a wonderful piece of biscuit, which is what I'm actually filling, so she actually can sort of respond without choking and spitting out all the whole thing. It's Kira Ulsbrook from, of course, Ilkeston. She's kind of part Scottish.
Okay, you can skip the introduction now.
Yeah, it's good. So there we are, Arthur. Moving on, in a few moments, we'll be talking to gifting expert Christina Kaiser. Now, in your experience as an ace author, Arthur, have you ever come across an occupation which was called gifting expert? Somebody who's expert in what gifts you should actually purchase. It's all coming up with Mother's Day, of course. Apparently, sons are three times as likely to have had a Mother's Day gift bought on their behalf by a partner. That's also sons spend more on average on a Mother's Day gift than daughters, but daughters are more inclined to give homemade gifts instead.
I agree with that. Personalised, bit more sort of, you know, bit more sort of emotional with it.
I do scrapbooks.
Just a bunch of flowers and a box of chocolates.
Exactly. I think that's our point proven,
isn't
it?
You can actually trigger off hay fever and indeed type 2 diabetes. So it's fantastic. You know, it's like a caring gift.
Happy Mother's Day.
Exactly. Is the inheritance sorted out? No, yeah. Don't go down there. It's not a good thrill to take. Kira, she's chewing. You see, she's so hungry. Are you? I mean, what do you handcraft things? I mean, Emma just said she does a scrapbook, which is really quite wonderful, really.
I'm not that creative, if I'm honest. Like,
it's just a scrapbook of things that Emma Street has done over the years. So,
I think they call it Facebook, creative, really. Don't? So. Yeah. No, I'm just normal. I don't do the generic flowers and chocolates because. My mum probably would get diabetes, to be fair. So that's one reason
there
why.
You are.
No, I do.
Cigarettes and alcohol.
Yeah, exactly. No.
Also, not a good line.
Drugs
to take.
As well.
Well, yeah, please.
I do. It's like a photo frame, like different photo frames that are like
a collage
together, but it's not that creative. It's not like getting a scrap.
Did you ever give any presents to your mother when obviously she was functioning Arthur in all sorts of ways?
No, there was no such thing as Mother's Day.
Yeah.
Every day was Mother's Day.
Precisely. Yet again, another American invention put to actually ensure that people buy more stuff.
Fathers and Valentine's.
Mothering
and
Sunday.
And then there's the Father's Day, of course. Let's not forget Father's Day.
Let's never forget Father's Day. But that's in June, so we haven't started getting public relations agencies contacting us to actually talk about Father's Day.
But you've got to plan ahead.
It's very true, you know. My line to the fore. Eloise, what about yourself? In Hammersmith, London, is it a case of, yes, I always have something creatively put together for my mother?
A bit of both. Depends. Going by what my brother will buy. But
do you not buy it for him?
No, I don't.
No, you don't actually buy your mother, your brother's gift for... No.
Right, well, one brother's useless, but the other one does buy stuff.
Right. There we are. Good. And Rory?
Well, I have to be quite creative, actually, when it comes to Mother's Day, because my dad's birthday is the day before.
Wow.
So, in terms of gifts, I'm going to have to be looking out for some good stuff. But as for me being creative, it only comes down to what I get.
I don't know whether this will help in terms of creativity, Arthur, or indeed the thought for the day, but this research that was conducted by Collect Plus also revealed that some mothers had been handed a box of chocolates, a box of cornflakes, a hammer, a potato, and some welding gloves. So, I mean, I can understand the welding gloves, because after all, what mum doesn't actually like to get out the oxyacetylene torch every so often and do a bit of, DIY, it's the way forward.
Well, maybe doing a creme brulee and,
You're quite right, creme brulee, so, welding gloves, vital from that point of view. But, Emma, would you ever thought of perhaps providing your mum with a hammer, for instance?
No, I don't think she'd like me very much if I did that.
A potato? I mean, it's Lincolnshire, so I mean, it would be good for that.
Yeah, but she grows her own potatoes.
Wow.
So, you know.
What about one you've grown for her, though? You say, Mum, this is a potato I've grown just for you.
Oh, grown with love.
Give it a name.
Yeah, exactly.
Pete. We'll call it Pete.
Pete
the potato.
Pete the potato. Anyway, is this a case, Arthur, when you sort of listen to this and you think the world has completely actually lost its plot? Or
absolutely.
I think we've all lost our plot. Well, certainly I have.
That's what 25 minutes of Richard
Fitzwilliam's
been doing.
The plot with the potato in it.
Exactly.
That was a good joke, wasn't it? Plot.
Yeah. Sorry.
Plot
sorry.
Land.
That was bad.
There you go.
Oh, I've only just got it. I get it now.
It's what Rory would refer to as a slow-burning joke. It takes time. Shall we just repeat it for the
It requires an explanation.
Potato. Ben, I've lost the plot. Rory.
The plot with the potato in it. Hey, I'm so sorry.
I mean, I can't really envisage Anton Deck even using that material, Arthur, but...
Oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah, that's true. It's true, yeah, exactly.
Geordie joke.
Yes. So what have you been getting up to recently, Arthur? I mean, since we last spoke 7 English days ago.
Just getting on with life, really. Mm. And,
any more roofing?
That's still ongoing. Good. Yes, that's good. Still ongoing. Just getting the bits and pieces together. Bit of paint and decorating, just generally sort of getting on with life.
Exactly.
Enjoying the weather. The weather's fine.
Helps the creativity. So, given that we have Ben, Kira, Eloise, Emma, and Rory in the studio, what kind of thought for the day would you like to give them to kind of
Funny enough, I was thinking about that before we... and there's a couple which actually fit in with Mother's Day today. The first one is an Oscar Wilde one. I'm getting you some good stuff here, mate.
Of course.
That says the smallest act of kindness is worth more than the grandest of intentions.
Yeah.
Which is I think is pretty good, but a better one in relation to kindness is kindness is a language that the deaf can hear, and the blind can see.
The smallest act of kindness is worth more than the grandest intentions, and kindness is an act that the deaf can hear and the blind can see. Which one, Eloise, as you're about to leave us to go to a lecture about independent studies, what exactly are you going to carry with you in your heart?
The second one.
That's good. Kira?
I'm going to go for the first, because it's very true to what it says.
He's got a lot of time in his hands, isn't he, this Oscar, wasn't he?
He's got nothing to declare but his genius. And as I believe the last sort of words apparently that were attributed to Oscar Wilde when he was lying ill in bed, very poorly, Arthur, you probably confirmed this line, he sort of said, either that wallpaper goes...
Yours,
oh, I do.
That's right.
Yeah, and of course the wallpaper is still there. So it just goes to show internal decorating.
And then it ended the sentence with why I...
Oh.
That could have been Napoleon's.
It could indeed, very much so. Rory, which one would you go for?
I think they're both very good, but I will join Kira on the first one, I think.
Okay. And Emma?
I like the first one as well.
Marvellous. Ben?
I like them both.
Well, there we are. This neutrality put together.
Yeah. Okay, middle ground. Just to be in it. Annoying.
So there we have it. Still to come, we'll also be talking possibly with William Sitwell about how you can actually buy oxygen now. It's designer oxygen, so that's always very important. To be precise, Arthur, it's a new A-list must-have for all celebrities. Kanye West, Kim Kardashian, Khloe Kardashian, all connected with this whole system. Boost Oxygen. It costs £19.99 for 9 litres of oxygen. That's about 20 breaths that you actually get. So if you fancy actually getting some Boost Oxygen, well, you never know when you're in the midst of a...
What does it give you? To say you've had some air from, I don't know,
designer air, exactly. You know, it's
like, can I not be bothered to have a walk around the block?
I know. Well, you see, honestly, Arthur, you're
save 20 quid.
You're the sort of person who would actually say, "Well, why don't we just use the tap to actually sort of get our water, as opposed to actually?"
Right.
These are things we need to, you know, we give green creams to, etc. And obviously, bottled air is something which is could be a marketing winner. Think about it from a possible career perspective. Anyway, I think
it'll be a great big. They're going to be running iron lungs shortly, I would think.
Thanks. Yeah. Yeah, not great for mobility, though. Really, I mean, in all sorts of ways. I mean,
somebody put an engine on them.
That's true. Well, I think somebody was speaking quite highly yesterday on one of our programs about. Actually, it was Inspired on Air about metal straws that apparently are the solution to the sort of plastic and paper sort of routine. Have your straws made out of metal? But iron straws would be a whole different thing. I mean, surely it'd taste metallic in the mouth, really. Well, that's technology. Moving on. Rory, would you like to ask Arthur McKenzie those last two questions, please?
So, Arthur, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us here today?
Yes, it has been a bit manic, but yes, very much. Yeah.
Very good. And will you be joining us again soon?
Well, if I'm asked, yes, certainly.
It's a case of dialing up the manic nature. Oh, we haven't commented on Ian. Has he returned us yet?
Yes, I've spoken on yesterday.
Wow. You're so
good fella.
Okay, next week I'm going to look to get them both on. Not necessarily at the same time, because that would actually...
That's a lot of Geordie knows.
Exactly. That's
double dose.
But I think we will look at kind of adjusting those things too, because obviously, Ian, 10,000 words he's produced whilst being over in...
I know, 12,000.
You see, that's it. You know?
12. Almost as much as magistration.
Exactly. And all you needed was 3 or 4 weeks in Spain.
Indeed.
That's all you needed to do, Ben. You know, all this kind of other stuff. Kira, Bella and my 3 or 4 weeks in Spain might be a good solution for dissertation.
I'll definitely take that on. Yeah.
I'll come with you.
Yeah,
let's
go to Spain.
Yeah. Yeah, definite thoughts on that basis. Eloise, we salute you. We will see you next week. She's heading off now to be, again, educated at the fantastic University of Lincoln, because that's what she does. And up next, as we said, hopefully, Christina Kaiser, gifting expert, then and possibly Alison Ogden Newton, Chief Executive Officer of Keep Britain Tidy. William Sitwell again, possibly. Lindsay Clay, and you love this one, Arthur, Bruce Olaf Solheim, who's a paranormal professor from California, who's going to be talking about his encounters with John Wayne, with Elvis Presley, and a Nazi who was his aunt. So, never let it be said we don't push those boundaries here, as far as
take some touchy pills.
Well, obviously, the manic theme's continuing.
Well, you might say manic, I might say Van Gogh. It's a different world entirely. Still, bit too much yellow on the show, I feel. Just a bit too much yellow. A round of applause for Arthur McKenzie, please. Hurrah! And news coming up next after moderation, not manic moderation, from Florence and the Machine on Siren Radio.
Siren.
Want me to love you in moderation? Do I look moderate to you? Sip it slowly and pay attention. I just have to see it through. You got me looking for validation. Passion's new. Want me to love you in moderation? Well, who'd you think you're talking to?
And the weather today, highs of 15 degrees centigrade, lows of 10 degrees centigrade. It's going to be a day with light cloud and a gentle breeze.
Terrible sound.
the best of all, it seems to me. It was underneath the Christmas tree. And yet, I guess I'd have to say that it made all the other presents twice as gay. The best gift that I've ever known, I'd always wanted most to own.
Ah, yes, Barbara Streisand and The Best Gift. And clearly the best gift for many people might indeed for Mother's Day be a potato, or possibly some welding gear, or possibly indeed, as we talked about earlier, maybe some cornflakes, a box of course. So to address this, as promised, we're delighted to welcome to the programme gifting expert extraordinaire, it's Christina Kaiser. How are you, Christina?
Hello, I'm good. Thank you for having me today.
Well, it's a delight to touch base as ever. And it's interesting, in terms of Barbara Streisand there, she was thinking about the best gift. I mean, were you surprised by this this research about Mother's Day habits? I mean, we're trying to actually promote the notion of giving your mum a potato with love. You know, is it going to work?
I would definitely say please don't get those for sure as Mother's Day's gift. That would be my advice.
And not a box of cornflakes?
No.
Okay. Well, I think we've identified in the studio we have four folk with us, Emma and Rory and Kira and Ben, and I don't think any of them are going to be providing a potato or indeed a box of cornflakes for them.
You don't know that yet.
That's true. That's very true. So in terms of this gifting habits, sons generally spending more money whilst daughters are more likely to gift something handmade. Again, is this surprising, or is it just a case of here we are, we're supposed to be in an era where gender stereotyping is no longer there, and yet still we're finding that you're getting a kind of split between the genders here?
Yes, you're right. I think the research conducted by Collect Plus showed that there are definitely some clear variations between men and women. I would say that especially for Mother's Day, women could look at it differently if they're mothers themselves, so they know how tireless it can be and how much appreciation it needs to be shown, and that kind of reflects in the gifts, because gifting in the end is something that shows, like, you're getting a gift knowing someone or being knowledgeable about who they are and what they want, and I think, like, women being mothers, they tend to have more empathy with their own mothers.
Is the old maxim that the thoughts that count still worth actually acknowledging, or is that often used by people who can't be bothered to actually get any gifts whatsoever?
Honestly, I think, I mean, through the research, we also found out that a lot of Brits go for traditional, so meaning flowers and chocolates gifts. And I would say, like, I think it's always nice to give a gift in the end, so yes, it's the thought that counts, but if you want to do something special for this Mother's Day, I would recommend to think more about the mothers as individuals and not just as being mothers. So if you get something that she might not get herself, or things that would delight her, that's definitely something that would make your gift choice more thoughtful.
Okay, let's open it up. Ben, any thoughts or questions you'd like to put to Christina?
Yeah, so do you find, perhaps more so in recent times, that people participating in Mother's Day may have declined? I know a lot of people tend to think of it as a commercial opportunity for businesses, as opposed to a meaningful day when perhaps you could treat her on another day. And you don't necessarily need a day as such, a national day, to recognise that.
Yes, I think, I mean, there might be a tendency, but still, I think with all these days, I think they just remind us on the day itself to think a little bit more clearly about what this person is doing, things that we take for granted. So I think it's just a nice chance to say thank you or to appreciate the things that they do. Definitely. I mean, if you're appreciating your mother every day throughout the year, that's even better, I would say.
Spa experiences, pampered treats, day out for the entire family are all aspects that have been acknowledged in this Collect Plus survey, proving, of course, that mums can actually be truly selfless from that point of view. Kira, any questions or thoughts from yourself?
The only thing I can think of is, because no matter what a special occasion it is, whether it's a birthday, Mother's Day, Father's Day, anything like that. Is there ever such thing as a perfect gift?
I always say a gift isn't a gift unless it has meaning. So I would say the perfect gift is the gift that you think is the perfect gift for this person in this situation. I hope this doesn't make it too complicated, but
no.
Yes, there is the perfect gift if you make it a perfect gift.
So, Emma, in many ways, your collection of collages and so on might be well into that. I mean, Emma Street, any thoughts that you'd like to add?
I'm kind of like running out on ideas now to for what to do for my mum. I've done the scrapbook, I've done photo frames, I've done like a little pamper box and bath bombs and all that kind of stuff. Have you got any
pamper box and bath bombs, Christina?
You want inspiration?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've actually come up with a list of thoughtful gifts or gift ideas together with Collect Plus that you can find on their website and check it out. For now, I would say I think one thing that's also like on trend right now. And a nice gesture for moms is Polaroid cameras. A lot of mothers love to take pictures of their grandkids or of their children, and that way they can have their pictures right on the wall. So I found that that's a very nice gift for not all mothers, but it might be for yours.
There we are. A useful thought there from our gifting expert, Christina Kaiser. And finally, Rory, anything that you has this inspired you to actually say, yeah, I'm going to get my mum a gift that's going to make the whole of Bedfordshire stand up and applaud me?
Well, I think actually a Polaroid camera is a definitely good idea for my mum. I know she loves photographing everything and keeping records and the such, so I think I'll actually take that advice, Christina.
I'm happy to hear that. It's
just wonderful. Christina, where can people go to find out more information about what we've been talking about today? Would it be collectplus.co.uk?
Exactly, that's where it is, and my top gift ideas will also be available there, and if you're interested to get more my gift advice, just Google Gift Expert UK, and I'll be happy to hear from you.
Christina Kaiser. By the way, when you were at school and you were sort of considering a career and so on and so forth, did you actually have gifting expert in mind? Because, I mean, I can see this could open up a whole range of things now. People be doing degrees in gift experting and so on. How did you get the post as gift expert?
So actually, I was a lifelong lover of thoughtful gifting and beautiful presentations from early on. So that's why I was constantly asked by friends and family to give gifting advice. But you're right, there is nothing where you can study being a gift expert. As I found out that it was easy for me, but not for others, I started to do a lot of research into the needs and psychology of gifting, and there is a lot out there about gifting and how you can help people to become better gift givers.
Absolutely.
And that's basically my vision, to help people to become better gift givers.
And that, Christina Kaiser, is why we appreciate you being the gift to the world, which is the gift that keeps on giving, which is wonderful. Christina Kaiser, many thanks indeed. A round of applause for Christina, please.
Thank you so much. Have a lovely day.
Yeah. the sea, she knew a sailor who'd been to war. She never even knew a sailor before. She never even knew his name. He'd come to town and he would pound her for a couple of days. And then he'd sail across the bubbling waves. And those were happier days. But now
Harry Nilsson, gotta get up. As we do, particularly if you're looking for celebrity air, something we had to hold back from last week, but William weighs in, of course, on celebrity wear air after a recent bracing swim off the Cornish coast and several deep breaths of morning air. You received a press release, William, it would seem, concerning the latest A-list must-have. This is not April the 1st. William Sitwell, welcome to the programme. Have you got your bottle of Boost Oxygen ready?
I just think it's cheaper to open the window.
Yeah, I know people have been talking ever since, obviously, many water companies have actually developed their own thing, but celebrity air, is it? I mean, what were your thoughts when that emerged? Did you think, has the world lost the plot? Or is this a case of, what a great way to actually have an industry that could possibly be marketed, whatever happens with respect to Brexit?
Well, I think one of the things to understand is that this isn't actually air that is procured from celebrities. It's air that is endorsed by celebrities.
Good.
Although, to be honest, I reckon the former is probably more valuable than the latter.
Yeah. I mean, do you think there's a possible market we could open up for sort of William Sitwell carbon dioxide? always thinking of possible sort of ways
forward.
You
have to do burp into a jar?
No. You breathe out. You breathe in oxygen. You breathe out carbon dioxide. It's a natural thing.
With William's laugh alone, he's just produced much more carbon dioxide to sell.
It's true.
I think in the however many years it is we've been speaking that. Without question, the funniest thing you've ever said.
Well, there we are. You know, it is the spring equinox, as I pointed out to Richard Fitzwilliams earlier, so that's what happens, really. Kira, any questions you'd like to put to William, such as where in the world is he today?
Yes, that's very true, actually. Where are you today?
I'm just arriving in London. I'm in a car.
Oh, very
and,
good.
And I've come up to town for some meetings.
Marvellous. Well, there'll be good meetings, Captain. I know.
I've actually got my wife in the car with me. I think Emily would love to be on the radio.
No, I'm...
Oh, yeah.
Kept that secret.
I'm just prompting him.
Let's say hello, Emily, from the Midweek Drive. After three. Three. Hello, Emily. From the Midweek Drive. There we
hello,
are.
Hello, Midweek Drive.
Yeah, exactly. It's genius. The natural. Yeah, it's superb stuff. It's like being the heart-to-heart of broadcasting in many ways. I would obviously be Freeway or something. It's great, great
That's
stuff.
The second funniest thing you've ever said.
We're on a roll.
Well, you know, just keep it going from that point of view. Emma, any thoughts or questions from William?
Can you tell us what kind of meetings you're going to today?
That's dangerous.
Is that too?
I mean, sometimes he. Well,
I'm expanding my supper club quite excitingly. So watch this space on that. That's one of the meetings I'm having. And what else? The other thing I'm doing, actually, I'm going to see a friend of mine this evening having his head kicked in for charity, which is quite... I'm going to a white boxing match, and the big main event is Alistair the King, who is defending his heavyweight title. Well, he hasn't got one, but neither has his opponent. And he is the main event, and they're raising money for a breast cancer charity this evening. Well, but I have to say, the other thing I'm going to is the final closing down party of one of the great restaurants, certainly of the 90s, if not the 2000s, which is Kensington Place, which is shutting this evening after having been operating for about 25 years. This is where Roly Lee made his name with his chicken and goat cheese mousse and his foie gras and a bed of sweet corn. It's where one of the greatest maitre d's, Tim Bryce, operated. And there was this very famous occasion because Michael Winner used to go in there quite a lot, and he once went into the restaurant, and they couldn't get him his usual table, and so he said to Tim Bryce, the maitre d', "Do you know who I am?" And Tim Bryce...
Do you know, I thought Michael Winner would come back from the dead there for a moment, William. I really did. I thought, whoa.
"Do you know who I am?" And so Tim Bryce got on the microphone, which and addressed the entire restaurant, said, "Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry to disturb you, but there's a gentleman who doesn't know who he is. If anyone can help me, then they please come to the front."
But, so Michael Winner of all people.
Exactly. It's the way. Well, after all that work he did with Charles Bronson, it's the least he deserved, really, on that basis. Yes. Genius.
I don't think he visited the restaurant after that. I once interviewed him, actually. I once interviewed him, and he gave me my cover line, which was, "Why am I so fat?"
Yeah.
I think, do you know what? I think we need to do this Michael Winner voice into an idea. We can have this as William's introduction onto the show.
When we get together in the studios, I think we'll definitely look towards that, because like, I'm getting chills already. I mean, it's almost as though he's come back to haunt us from that point of view. William and Emily, it's been delightful to share some thoughts with your good self. Presumably it's been hands-free. Best not to say anything on that sort of basis, because, well, of course it would be, etc. Safe driving.
No, so Emily's made a debut, hasn't she?
Exactly. It's very exciting from that point of view. So, I take it you've both had a reasonably interesting telephonic link today?
I think you put your finger on it. I think this will go down in history.
Well, either that, and that's why the podcasts are all available. Exactly. All celebrity air.
We should sell it for £20.
No, we pass the goodness
to the world.
It's got two of your funniest jokes on it, Alex.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and it's endorsed by William's heir.
As you know, there is the classic line about the most popular owl in British households, of course, being tea towels. So, silence. Will you be back again, William? Will you rejoin us with more celebrity air stuff and, of course, little reviews of restaurants as well? Will you be kind enough to return?
Definitely, and we can create more magic, which could be released as a single and be this year's Christmas number one.
There we go.
I've been out walking. I don't do that much talking these days. These days I seem to think a lot about the things that I forgot to do. And all of the time I had the chance to, I don't think I'll risk another these days. These days. And if I seem to be afraid to live the life that I have made in song, well, it's just 'cause I've been losing so long. I've quit my scheming. I don't do all that dreaming these days. These days I sit on cornerstones, count the time in quarter tones to ten. Don't confront me with my failures, I've not forgotten them.
A recent study commissioned by cleaning experts Kutcher in partnership with Keep Britain Tidy have found that the most common neighbourhood gripes for Brits are litter, dog mess, fly tipping and broken glass. So clearly the Keep Britain Tidy campaign is needed vitally to actually address this, and we're delighted to actually welcome to the programme today Chief Executive Officer at Keep Britain Tidy, that the wonderful Alison Ogden-Newton. Good morning, Alison.
Good morning to you, Alex.
So the Great British Spring Clean is about to start, running between the 22nd of March through to the 23rd of April, and this is a real opportunity to hopefully get involved with respect to sorting out our environment and ensuring that we live in places that we want to live in, really.
That's right. You know, everybody wants to love where they live. Most people do. Most people are proud of where they live. But, you know, litter is really getting people down. And it's not just unsightly. It's an assault to the environment. And the Great British Spring Clean is an opportunity for everyone to get stuck in. But it's also an opportunity to raise awareness and make it send the message very clearly that this is not the kind of behaviour that we want to see in our communities.
4 in 5 British folk admit that the cleanliness of their community has a significant impact on their emotional well-being. Again, it might seem startlingly obvious, but at the end of the day, again, it's an important sort of line to bear in mind when we might sort of feel, however tempted sometimes, to actually say, one little piece of paper won't make any difference. One little, actually, it will. They all mount up.
Well, they certainly do. Cigarette butts, for instance, which are absolutely tiny. There are millions of them being littered every day. They're 97% plastic. They're full of up to 5,000 toxic chemicals. They render water unsustainable for organic life, and they flow straight into our water table and can get out through our rivers and ultimately oceans, killing wildlife as they go. So tiny bits of litter can make a huge difference. It all mounts up. We've got plastics entering the food chain through the plastics that we've littered that have entered into the oceans. And you know, this is our opportunity to say enough's enough, and we want everybody to find a bin. It's not difficult. And we also want to give everybody the opportunity to get more excited about where they will live, to tackle it, and through Kartra have the opportunity to nominate an area near them that they would like to see clean up, which hopefully will make a huge difference to how people feel in that particular area.
Well, this is, of course, particularly exciting news. Here we are in Lincoln. I'm not suggesting that the city of Lincoln needs deep cleaning, but there are other parts of the area that possibly could benefit from a whole variety of aspects. How can people actually find out what's actually happening in Lincolnshire, or indeed in the East Midlands?
Well, if they go to the Keep Britain Tidy website, or they Google the Great British Spring Clean, it'll take them to the same place. They can sign up to the Spring Clean, find out what's going on around them, and they can also nominate an area through the website that will be able to, you know, we'll be poring over the nominations, and the winner will see hopefully a total transformation.
There is, of course, a growing notion that mindfulness and giving thanks for the usefulness that we've actually had from products and then moving on is very much at the fore of this. But actually, I'd say that whole essence of not just tidying up, but also cleaning up as well can actually be quite therapeutic too.
It's great fun. Anybody who's gone on a litter pick, obviously I've done a few in my time. It's really therapeutic. You feel great. You know you're doing something really wonderful for the environment. That plastic, that aluminium, it has no business being there. Wildlife crawls into drinks containers and often can't get out. One of our pieces of research found that over 3.4 million voles are killed every year from drinks containers that are discarded. So every single one you pick up makes a difference. And, of course, you're out there, you're with people, you're showing how much you care about where you live. It all speaks to a very healthy, happy mind. And ultimately, the big benefactor is the community.
Now, our listeners can obviously message Kartra UK on their Facebook or Instagram channels. What sort of things should they actually include in that message to Kartra?
Well, what we want to hear about is how people feel about their community, what makes them proud of it, and their concern about a specific area that, you know, if it was cleaned up, what difference that would make to that community. So, you know, the Great British Spring Clean is all about pride. It's all about taking pride in your area. And showing everybody how important it is to you by making a difference. And we want to hear about that and hear about how you feel strongly about where you live in Lincoln and, you know, how you would like us to help you make a difference.
And Alison, what was it that led you to actually enter the Keep Britain Tidy organisation? Was it something that, I mean, I hesitate to suggest you're always a tidy person because I'm sure you always have been, but was it something which you sort of thought, yeah, this is a way in which I can make a genuine difference?
Absolutely. I mean, you're actually talking to a woman who, when I was at school at the age of about 10, between 9 and 10, I picked up thousands of plastic crisp packets and contacted the then Smiths, this was pre any other major manufacturer, and asked them to come and get them back. And I had many, many thousands of them by that stage. And somebody did actually, and I made my local paper with this obsessive compulsive behaviour. But I was already alert to the horrors of litter, and that we really do need close cycle, we need a closed cycle. We need to be producing food that is fully recyclable, and the people who produce it need to be engaged with that. And all of us out there, when we're purchasing, you know, look at what you've bought. Think about, you've talked earlier about mindfulness, Alex, and you know, what is it that you've enjoyed the meal? What can you do now with that packaging, and how can you help us recycle it? Because all of us have to be engaged in that. It is about finding the bin at the very least, but better yet, take it home, recycle it, and we won't end up with the kind of devastation that we seem to be on course for at the moment.
Or maybe even upcycle and avoid a world where Wally is the kind of de facto person, because we don't want to leave the planet as yet. There's still many good thousands of years, I think, for us, as long as we take care of it, of course. That's the key thing.
It is, absolutely. And it is about small things we can all do every day that will make a big difference. You know, this isn't just about polar bears, which, you know, are incredibly important and move us all, but seem remote. This is about how we consume and what we do with what we consume, and also how we can get stuck in. You know, it's wonderful. About 140,000 school kids are getting involved in the Great British Spring Clean, and they're inspired to make a difference. And on our Eco Schools programme, you know, teaches kids that, you know, how they pick up litter, what they do with nature's resources, will make a huge difference. And they're the generation taking this debate forward. But you know, with them at the front helm, I think, you know, we could have a better future than the one that we seem resigned to at the moment.
Literally just hours to go before, of course, the Great British Spring Clean kicks off on the 22nd of March, runs all the way through to the 23rd of April. But I suppose, to paraphrase the old classic line, cleaning is for life, not just for the Easter period.
Absolutely. You know, it's for every day. It's those little everyday moves. It's finding a bin. It's engaging in recycling. It's using reusable cups, reusable bottles. It's making small changes that, you know, will make an enormous difference ultimately to the environment. And by all means, sign up. We've had over 400,000 volunteers already sign up to the Great British Spring Clean. And we're hoping to bust through to 500,000, which would be fantastic and make us the largest volunteer campaign in the UK. And you know, we'll send the message loud and clear that communities want a cleaner future.
Exactly. Alison Ogden Newton, Chief Executive Officer for Keep Britain Tidy. Many thanks indeed. Hopefully we'll speak again very soon, and keep the prognosis of optimism ever to the fore. Will you join us again?
Absolutely. It'd be my pleasure.
And if we're talking about getting messages across, why not use the medium of television? Yes, that wonderful device that was so prevalent in the latter years of the 20th century and still is around in our screen-based culture. Apparently, television advertising revenue in the UK in 2018 totaled £5.11 billion. Now, to talk about this and how television advertising is maybe still a very strong player when it comes to brands, businesses, cosmetics, and a whole variety of other bits and pieces, the Chief Executive Officer of the wonderful Thinkbox, that'd be Lindsay Clay. Good morning, Lindsay. How are we?
Good morning. I'm very well. How are you?
Excellent. Now, again, we were told for a long time, television, it's gone. I mean, you know, everybody's online now and you want to push on that basis, or possibly even, dare I say it, radio, audio, etc. But it's still a very big player in the business world, isn't it?
It's a huge player. I mean, not there's anything wrong with radio advertising, very powerful medium too, but...
Well, we're advertising TV. Free on Siren, so we don't really matter, but that's...
Yeah, well,
yeah, exactly.
But yes, TV generated more than £5 billion in revenue last year, which was the same as 2017. And given the complete, you know, economic and political turbulence we've been going through, that's a really strong performance. It's a real vote of confidence in TV advertising.
Is this something which works for all aspects? I mean, we've just been doing, obviously, a notion of Keep Britain Tidy, and I still remember the ads which went around, and there still are, of course, public campaign ads, etc. So, you know, are we looking at companies and campaigns effectively looking at a portfolio of areas that they need to look for, with television obviously being, you know, probably one of the biggest of those players?
Yeah, TV is huge, and what it really does is it changes the way people feel about things. So going back to that Keep Britain Tidy campaign, yes, I remember that too, and it has an incredibly powerful effect. It really changes the way you think and feel and act. But of course, it works works really well in combination with other media too. So your other spend will work harder if TV is powering it. TV advertising accounts for 71%. 1% of all the profit generated by advertising. So it's really significant.
867 new or returning brands, and returning brands effectively more than a five-year gap, took part in British television across the year. We have in the studio here the chairman of Signet PR, which is a public relations company run by students within the University of Lincoln, Ben Lewis. Ben, any questions on this and your thoughts on the research?
Yeah, it's interesting, actually, because part of my dissertation is on digitalisation, mainly luxury brands. However, I have looked at the difference between digital media and traditional media, and I noticed particularly television news consumption and just watching television has gone down rapidly over the last few years. However, it still remains the highest means that people consume information. And I wonder, do you find it's going to go down over time, or advertising will change over time, or do you think it will still stay as it's always been?
Well, TV viewing is definitely changing, and we can see that in all our behaviour. But it's only the linear live TV viewing that's going down. Other parts are growing enormously. So on-demand TV viewing, for instance, is growing. So we're actually, you know, if you count up all the TV we're watching, we're actually watching more than we did 10 years ago. We're just watching a bit less live. So the whole thing is changing. But of course, on-demand TV also comes with advertising too, so TV ought to be reasonably secure on that front.
Of course, subscription-based services, Lindsay, are something else where people say, yes, I go to those subscription services because I don't have to deal with ads. And of course, there was the panic which was set up with the advent of the video recorder back in the 80s, where people say, we'll just fast forward through the ads, etc., which is obviously the last thing you want to hear if you're actually wanting to get your product out there.
Well, it's true, but of course, nobody's forcing you to watch ads. And it's in the UK, it's a balance that works really well for the viewer. So out of all the TV, commercial TV that we watch, about three quarters of it is to live TV. Mm. So people are actively choosing to do that. You know, nobody's forcing them. And so it's obviously the balance of, you know, watching programming content relative to advertising is one that works pretty well for the viewer. They're reasonably comfortable with it. So, of course, they do record some of their viewing, and probably two-thirds of the time you'll fast-forward through the ads in that viewing. But those ads are free to advertisers, so they're not charged for those. So it's a bit of a sort of bonus, extra free.
Are we looking at change? I mean, demographically, I can ask a group of students, and as Ben's rightly said, very few would actually sort of be active television watchers unless it's an event television thing or other aspects. Is that going to change as generations move along? And will television have to adapt into the screen-based cultures?
Well, that's a great question. TV is already changing, and, you know, most students will tell you they don't necessarily even have a TV set. It doesn't mean they're not watching TV. They may be watching less live than other demographics, but they will, you know, if it's good enough, they will make sure that they watch it. And then if the program is something that really appeals to them, they will definitely revert to live viewing. So if you look at something like the Love Island phenomenon of last summer, you know, most young people will be making sure that they watch that live.
Although it's pretty sad that most of the Love Island contestants seem to be having lots of mental issues from that point of view. That's another issue entirely for another debate and another line. Let's move on to Emma. Does that chime with your own experiences? Any thoughts from yourself?
I don't really watch TV anymore. I tend to watch Netflix and things like that, apart from maybe soaps with my dad. But
And Kira?
I'm kind of the same as Emma, really. The only time I ever watch TV is if it's a period drama or Secret Life of the Zoo, actually. I love that. So when that's on, I always watch that.
Or 5-year-olds.
Yes, or the 5-year-olds.
So actually, there is quite a lot of TV being watched here. Did anyone watch the Michael Jackson documentary?
Yes, I loved it. Wow. Okay, so, I didn't love it. But.
No, but it was very compelling viewing, wasn't it?
Yes, definitely.
Or First Dates. Or Britain's Got Talent, or Derry Girls.
I see where you're going with this one, Lindsay, exactly. Rory, I mean, are you sort of warming to this argument?
Yes, I think I am. It's actually really interesting how on-demand TV, not just from the likes of Netflix and Amazon, but also I know Sky are doing their own like on-demand
We even have BritBox, which is being touted. I'm sure, Lindsay, you've got lots of sort of aspects about this combination of BBC, Channel 4 and ITV that's, I think, being moved as a kind of British answer to Netflix, really.
Well, it's an interesting new development, isn't it? And you might be interested to know that of the top 1,000 watched shows in the UK, all of them were made
in the UK. So British people actually love British content. And so, you know, it makes sense. There's definitely a demand here. It will fill a gap in the market.
Lindsay, where can people go to find out more information about what we've been chatting about this morning?
Obviously, come to our website, thinkbox.tv, for all your TV needs.
That makes perfect sense. The marketing body for commercial television in the UK. But again, a whole range of aspects there. Working with the marketing community with a single ambition to help advertisers get the best out of TV. There's a cynical line I often say, which is commercial television heading the way of commercial radio, where effectively the business of commercial broadcasting is to deliver audiences to advertisers? Or is that too cynical even for me?
There is a different balance in commercial TV.
Yeah.
So advertising is only a part of the overall revenue, and it only works if it works for the viewer. So I think that is one of the things that, because of course, you know, you don't have to watch commercial TV with ads. You've got the BBC, which has no ads, and you've got, you know, subscription models too. Broadcasters will have to work very hard to make sure it's something that still works for the TV viewer, and they're not too bombarded with ads.
Lindsay, there's many more things we can actually talk about. So two final questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting link with us on the programme today? Has it been good for you?
It's been great. Thank you.
So the next question is, can we look forward to featuring your good self and more Thinkbox magic on some of our future radio programmes? Will you return?
Of course. I'd be delighted.
A round of applause for Lindsay Clay, Chief Executive Officer of Thinkbox. The moment where we'll have to say au revoir to Ben Lewis, because he's not going to have time to stay around for Bruce Olaf Solheim with Timeless Deja Vu, a paranormal personal history, but he can listen again on podcasts, as indeed can you. And in case you're wondering, aha, take on me, we would have had The Sun Always Shines on TV, but that would have been a cliche. So, Ben, back on Wednesday, no doubt.
Yes, I'll be here on Wednesday.
That's okay. Rory, you might read the schedule and come along on a Wednesday. Who knows? You'll be back on Thursday, I'm presuming.
Yes, Thursday.
We don't know where Abigail is. Probably still preparing for her trip to Iceland.
Probably.
But Emma's here.
Yes. Yeah,
a bit tired. Is she okay? And you'll be back, presumably, in the near future? Next week?
Yeah, next week.
And Kira?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, there we are. The enthusiasm is positively enormous. Thanks to Eloise Sheehan, Gabriella Peralta, Richard Fitzwilliams, Arthur McKenzie, Christina Kaiser, Alison Ogden-Newton, William Sitwell and Emily, and Lindsay Clay. And you, dear listener, you'll enjoy the next 15 minutes with Bruce Olaf Solheim. We might say a sort of final farewell after that, but it is a paranormal personal history. Quite frankly, just extraordinarily amazing. Can we say happy post-happiness day, please?
Happy post-happiness day.
It's the day after Happiness Day.
That's a mouthful, isn't it?
Now, when we start talking about, clearly, the notions of there are many more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in our poor philosophy, we're not just quoting William Shakespeare's take on the whole thing from Hamlet. We might be looking at the whole human condition. And why not actually take this opportunity then to actually talk about some timeless opportunities? Deja Vu, a paranormal personal history, written by Professor Bruce Olaf Solheim, and a general chronological survey of some remarkable paranormal adventures. And who better to actually speak to than the author of aforementioned Timeless Deja Vu than indeed Professor Solheim yourself. Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
Hello, Alex. I'm doing fine.
Excellent.
It's a wonderful day in Southern California.
Well, this is it. Now, talking about, as I say, the paranormal, as we said at the start, all sorts of strange things happen in this electromagnetic world that we live in, as vibrational energy side of things from that point of view. But we tend to go through phases where people over history have either thought, yeah, paranormal is fantastic. I mean, obviously, in Victorian era, we had the notion of, well, the telegraph enables us to communicate over great distances. So why shouldn't we actually communicate over great dimensions as well? Would you like to talk us through your own particular interest in terms of why you've actually ended up teaching about the paranormal, actually in California as well, at Citrus College in Glendora?
Yeah, well, I think we're, just to say, comment on what you just said, I think we're in the midst of a paradigm shift of understanding of the paranormal and the supernatural, and it's always been my contention that the paranormal is actually normal and the supernatural is actually natural. We've just forgotten since we were ancient people, when we relied on it almost exclusively. But for me personally, it goes back to age 4 when I had my first paranormal experience. It was an angelic experience. It was a healing experience. And it happened to be in northern Norway, where my parents are from. We were visiting my grandmother. And I saw an angelic presence. I was very sick. They thought I was going to die. There's no hospitals up on that remote island 200 miles above the Arctic Circle. And my grandmother, my grand, and my parents thought I was going to die. And I saw an angel in the ceiling. And I woke up the next morning, and I was perfectly fine. So that kind of opened the floodgates, if you will, for the paranormal for me. And then things started happening randomly, but quite frequently after that. So.
Now
and that's continued to this day. When I'm 60 years old now.
Well, we've spoken in times past, obviously, with one of our regular Florida correspondents, inspirational writer Mike Dooley. Mike's actually in London shortly with Lorna Byrne, who can actually see angels and so on. One of the challenges, of course, that we get when we live in a technicist society where we're looking very much at how technology is looking after other things is, as you've just mentioned, that maybe we forget aspects from that point of view. Is it a case of ultimately, as human beings, we're also actually human receivers, and actually some of us can actually perceive more of the electromagnetic spectrum than perhaps others, and these are just sort of sense opportunities that we actually have.
I think you're absolutely right. I think there's some people tend to be more sensitive, more accepting, or as my spirit friends tell me, experiencing is believing and believing is experiencing. So the more you experience, the more you believe. The more you believe, the more experiences come your way. And I find this to be true every single day as I start picking up on other things. And actually, at a certain point, you really have to. It's just as important to learn how to turn this off so you can get a decent night's sleep and go about your daily routines. Otherwise, you have to keep. In other words, you have to keep one foot in this world and one, when you're connecting with the spirit world. So. It's a very subtle energy, and some people either deny it. I think it happens to everybody, but a lot of people deny it out of fear, or just for whatever reason they don't pay attention to it. Even though I think it happens to everybody.
The creator of Sherlock Holmes, of course, Arthur Conan Doyle, was a very keen believer in spiritualism and so on, and to the extent that actually he was, some might say, suckered into the Cottingley fairies exposure, where effectively there was a line that people were actually sort of seeing genuine fairies, and effectively it was proved years later that it was simply a classic case of fake news. Is there something actually in the human spirit that actually is consistently seeking this whole notion? I mean, I've cited in the past that maybe in times of great challenge, where there is uncertainty, where there is war, where there are challenges from that point of view, somehow we kind of psychologically need to have a fallback system to actually maintain that actually there's more to us than apparently we see in our tangible world.
Yeah, well, no, I think there's something to that too. I used to be in the Army, and there was an old saying, there are no atheists in the foxhole in combat, and I really believe that to be true. And on the other hand, I think there are some things in this world today. There's a lot of challenges we face as everybody on Earth, and I think that does pressure people to seek sources of comfort. And one is in the fact that who doesn't want to be in contact with their relatives who passed on, and that is comforting. Once you realize that they're not really gone, and that's why the name of the book, Timeless, that we never really completely die, we just go into another existence.
into the spirit world. So I think that kind of comfort is what people are looking for. It used to come from organized religion and still does in many ways. And they're really, the two are really compatible. As a friend of mine said, who used to be a member of the clergy, and now he's a philosophy, retired philosophy professor. His name is Jack Call. He said, if God isn't paranormal, who is?
Well, certainly looking at that whole notion of, again, people's viewpoints, people's perspectives, and so on. I mean, it's undeniable that we live in a universe which is ever-changing, ever-adjusting, and so on and so forth. Returning to timeless déjà vu, obviously before seen, literal translation from the French, a paranormal personal history, I'm intrigued by meeting Elvis Presley, John Wayne, an ancient alien. Is this along the time-space continuum? Because I'm sure you must have been faced over the years with the notion of this is just a case of an undigested bit of cheese, as Charles Dickens might have said in terms of Scrooge and so on.
Well, that's rather funny. The experience with John Wayne was that was a vision that I had while I was actually at the location at Green River Community College, where one of the first places I taught. And that story is based on that experience that I had as I was just sitting there on the bench and suddenly saw John Wayne. And then I realized the connection was that my friend was very much consumed by popular culture and especially John Wayne, and he was a Vietnam veteran. And so that whole story, I think that, you know, those connections were pretty clear right there. And I just happened to be in a moment where I was in a contemplative mood and reached that meditative state and was able to make those connections that were already there. In terms of Elvis, there was the I think the day after or the day Elvis died, I wrote, we were hiking in Eastern Washington State, my home state. And, we were just, grieving about Elvis and singing all the Elvis songs, and it just kind of overcame me, this idea of the presence of Elvis. And then I did something kind of rebellious, which was kind of what Elvis was known for, being, rather rebellious, at least at the beginning, although now it seems pretty mild compared to what goes on today in the entertainment industry. But so I think that kind of combined for that paranormal experience that I had there. And the ancient alien, that's a whole, boy, I tell you, that's a whole other book, actually. I hint at it and I talk about it a little bit in Deja Vu, but really the third book, which the completion of the trilogy, I call it Timeless Trinity, will come out next year, and it'll go much more into the alien connection and much more of my reaching out to this ancient alien.
Buddhists have often kind of suggested or put forward the notion that ultimately we are all simply aspects of the one, but actually that total unity is something which effectively we've forgotten because we've been split apart, we've been splintered, we forget how actually deeply connected we all are at an intrinsic cosmological level. Is it something like that that kind of addresses this whole notion of how when people do have what will be described as you said, the normal paranormal experience and so on, that actually it is a case of somehow we're kind of remembering where we've come from? Is that kind of an age of awakening that we're looking for? Or is that just the ramblings of a radio presenter?
No, it's I think there is something to that. And I mean, as children, we a lot of us had, and I had myself, imaginary, so-called imaginary playmates. But who's to say that they were imaginary? They're very real to me. And then as we grow up, we're told that that's not appropriate. We go to school and we're taught that's not appropriate, so you can't have your playmates with you. And in my case, I was very lucky that my mom was very psychic, so she allowed me to continue that. And I think that's what kind of retained some of, plus the experiences I was having. She didn't discourage it because she herself was having such experiences. So, I think that, people need this connection. And as far as, alien type stuff, that I very much and have been in communicating with this ancient alien, that I've asked pointed questions about, well, what's the difference between the paranormal world and the alien world, and they pretty much are together. I mean, this spirit world or this other dimension or whatever is how they operate, or in many times they do operate in this physical dimension too, and that's when people sometimes connect with them or see them visually. But I think it's all connected. It's all connected, and it's probably all connected to quantum physics, you know, which is something that although I'm not a scientist, I'm a historian, I have read a lot of quantum physics, and I think that the clues are there. I think the information is there, and I kind of develop a theory based on my own personal, I call it my own personal quantum reality.
Well, certainly from the perspective of history, I mean, it's ideal primary research. If you can not only actually engage in communication with people from times long past, then it gives you a whole range of things, although I'm not sure how many historical societies would necessarily take that as the time at this particular moment in time. In terms of the book itself, Timeless Deja Vu, A Paranormal Personal History, presumably available on all good media outlets and presumably online as well.
Yes, it is available as an ebook. It's available, you know, in print form and through the big old Amazon company, which seems to be taking over everything. It's generally available in the UK and throughout the world.
Well, Jeff Bezos obviously has got lots of things to do with respect to that. Given that. Again, there is this need, as we've alluded to. I mean, I'm mindful of the writer Richard Bach, who's probably most famous for Jonathan Livingston's Seagull, and obviously in The Bridge Across Forever, he did actually address this notion, which you could argue, again, has got quantum strangeness sort of built into the whole system, that the whole notion of thoughts becoming things, again, citing Mike Dooley there, the whole notion of we don't realise in so many ways how powerful we are, that actually the words we choose to employ, the kind of thoughts we actually engage in, are all part of that. But at the same time, we mustn't necessarily lose sight of the fact that, as I often like to refer to us, we're the spiritual otters of the universe, that we're here for a wee while. We need to engage in materials, but also ensure that, you know, we're ultimately kind and positive to each other, as opposed to sort of literally actually saying, well, how can I make a buck out of this?
Right. Yeah, well, actually, everything I've written, all the books I've written, the plays I've written, have all been because of I felt compelled to do it, not just something I sat down and thought, okay, this is something interesting to do. I couldn't do anything else but do that at that moment or for that block of time or those years that it took to make those or write those. I had to do it. And the essence of this whole thing, you know, and it sounds kind of Zen-like, but it's actually a spirit who told me this just a few weeks ago when a friend asked me to connect with a friend of theirs who had died. And she told me that the purpose of our lives in this physical world is to alleviate the suffering of others in this physical world. And because once you get to the spirit world, there are no more problems, no more worries, no more concerns. And it becomes very clear to me that, you know, people have these gifts. I have this gift for a reason. It's not to be squandered. I don't connect in the spirit world for money, although I don't begrudge people who do that because that could, you know, that's their, you know, their time is worth money. In my case, I just do it for friends and family and, you know, whoever comes up and asks and has a need. So, and writing my books, you know, is to help people understand what the journey I've been through and perhaps prompt them to take a similar journey and at least not be afraid of dying, which is, I guess, the title that was given to me by my dear friend who died 3 years ago.
Indeed, time of transition.
He gave me the title Timeless. So, yeah, I just want people to not be afraid of death, because once you're that paralyzed by fear of death, you're not really living and you're not accomplishing the mission that we have here, which is to alleviate the suffering of others.
Or indeed the classic line, as I said, consider fear as an acronym for false expectations appearing real, which is another line to pursue. Timeless Deja Vu, A Paranormal Personal History, again, as we mentioned, available through all good channels. We've got two final questions to put to you, Bruce. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the program today? Has it been okay for you?
The connection.
Has the interview been good? Has it been satisfactory?
Oh, yeah.
It's our customer satisfaction procedure. That's
okay.
Yeah,
I've really enjoyed our discussion and your questions. Yeah.
Well, then the next critical question is, can we prevail upon you to join us again? And whether we use the technology of the mobile phone or other landline systems or satellites or any of those routines, maybe even telepathy, will you be kind enough to return?
Yes, I would. I'd very much enjoy that, Alan.
extraordinary. There we are. And you can find out more from Bruce, if you wish, on BruceOlafSolheim.com. That's BruceOlafSolheim.com. S-O-L-H-E-I-M. Very quickly, because we haven't got much time left at all, because it's been such a packed programme. Emma, your thoughts on what Bruce was talking about there in terms of the paranormal and so on?
Well, I think it's really interesting. I mean, we were having a debate in here while we were listening to it about, you know, whether we believe in the paranormal and all that sort of thing. And I guess it's one of those things that we'll never know the real answer to.
I'm sure we will someday.
Well, everybody has different opinions and not everybody experiences it, so it's...
Kira, of course, you have experienced it.
Yes, and I'm going to go into detail because we only have, like, less than 3 minutes. Mm. But, no, I do believe in certain paranormal experiences and things, but there can be some instances where it just goes completely, you know, off guard, like with mediums saying, you know, oh, I've seen an alien. Like, I'm not saying that, you know, it's wrong or anything, but it's very unbelievable.
Opens up a whole range of things. Well, we'll find out, as Bruce said, about the ancient alien. I'm sure we'll come back onto the programme. And Kira, I know you want to speak to him, so we'll see how things work. Rory is a case of Bedfordshire. It's alien enough already. We don't have any need for paranormal stuff.
No. I think I'll take I'll take Ben Lewis's position of being the cynical one here and say that I'm not quite convinced entirely, if I'm honest. I like seeing things
tangible.
You know, tangible.
However we define tangibility.
I completely respect the man, but I am sceptical.
Atoms of the universe.
Just like Ben.
Well, it's spooky, wasn't it?
He is. Yeah. Ben reincarnated.
Almost like a paranormal
I've
scenario.
I've been possessed by Ben.
Very, very strange.
I love Brighton football.
Don't forget, later on today on Sion Radio, a whole heap of other goodies, including Sound and Next Vision, which is on this evening with Nick Elliott and Sue Rice, and a whole heap of other fantastic things as well. A great podcast that you can access as well. Keep on keeping on. Let's just say those words once again. Keep watching the skies. 1, 2, 3.
Keep watching the skies.
And then I got you off your knees, put you right back on your feet, just so you can take it.